for her roles in the vertigo-inducing cliffhanger with Sylvester Stallone, the star-studded thriller Outbreak, and many memorable television guest appearances like A Woman Scorned turned monster in the seventh season X-Files episode Chimera, Michelle Joyner is an actor, writer, and mother who has had a career spanning almost three decades. Using her talent and adaptability, Michelle has been able to play a diverse list of characters on both stage and screen. Quantum Leap fans may know her best as Sister Angela in The Right Hand of God, where she played a nun who inherited a boxer's contract who had to win the big fight to be able to build a dream church she envisioned as a little girl. Michelle Joyner, how are you doing today?
I am doing excellent, thank you. It's very nice to talk to you.
I'm excited to talk to you. This is a really good episode, considering it was basically at the beginning of the series. I want to say it's the second regular episode after the pilot.
I think that's right, yeah.
What memories can you share with me about your episode of Quantum Leap?
Well, it was awfully exciting just playing a nun. I thought that was really fun. I mean, I grew up watching like The Sound of Music and kind of idolizing Julie Andrews and Sally Field in the show that she did. The show she did there, she played the Flying Nun.
Yeah.
So it was just fun, just to even get in the costume, you know, the nun habit was kind of, you know, it was just really, you know, just instantly kind of transports you into the role. So, I mean, I don't think I've ever had another part where sometimes it happens with period things, like you put on a period costume and it kind of transports you instantly to the role. But other than that, I would say the nun habit was something really different for me. And it was really fun. It just kind of informed the whole performance, just being in that. But I thought it was interesting. The role had a, you know, she had a real backstory. She had a tragedy in her life where her family was killed and that she was on the streets, and God knows what happened to her on the streets. It doesn't really say, but you know, it wasn't anything good. And then she found God and became a nun. And so it was nice to have such a complex role and a complex backstory, because a lot of times the guest star is really just there to serve the plot and to serve the star, and you don't necessarily have such a rich story of your own. So it was really nice to be able to play with that, because, you know, it's just, like I said, it's not every day that the guest star has something with so much depth.
Yeah, and you had a pretty emotional scene in there in the middle of the episode.
Yeah, exactly, when I talk about my history and stuff. Yeah, it was, and the other thing that I remember was I was absolutely thrilled at the time to be working with Nancy Culp, who played, like, the Mother Superior. You know, she was the secretary from the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, and it was her second to last role, I believe.
Yeah, so I think it was. Yeah, she wasn't around too much longer after that, but that was such a thrill to meet her, and she was just fantastic, and you know, a real, you know, kind of a TV icon. So that was another bonus. One memory I have of that shooting that we shot on the lot, and I had a bicycle. You know, all the different stages had bicycles, and I remember riding around the studio when I didn't have to work. You know, if it wasn't my scene or something, I would just jump on the bike, and I would be in my habit, and I would just be riding around the studio, you know, looking at other things being filmed, and people would say, "Hey, sister, how you doing?" And that was a really fond memory of riding around on the bike in my habit around the studio. That was a lot of fun.
Did you find that people treated you different wearing the habit?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, you know, a lot of times when you're on the studio lot, you're there most of the time. You're on the lot, you're auditioning rather than working, you know, at least in those days. You know, I was in my 20s. And a lot of the time when you're on the studio lot, if you're going to audition, sometimes you're wearing a short skirt, or you're wearing high heels, or, you know, not that you're getting catcalled necessarily on the studio lot. That doesn't really happen. But, you know, it's just a different energy, certainly, when people think you're a nun. You know, there's a lot more deference. So that was, yeah, it was the whole thing was really neat. And then the other thing that was really nice about the job was I didn't even really have to even go to makeup, because I just didn't wear any makeup, because, you know, that character wouldn't. I mean, maybe they gave me a little powder or something, but so it was really nice to not spend, you know, because a lot of times when you show up on set, you're spending half the morning in the makeup and hair chair. But for that one, that wasn't the case.
No hair in that one if you weren't a habit.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. So I appreciated that, too. That was a first for me, to just be in a lot of shows. You're either being made up to look worse than you look, or made up to look better than you look, or, you know, or whatever. But in that one, I just skipped that step altogether. So that was nice.
What was the process like of you getting the role? Did you just go to an audition, or?
Just a regular audition. You know, I think it's really different now. I took You know, all in my 20s, I did a ton of guest star parts on shows like that and some pilots that I did that didn't go to series. But the guest star roles in those days were really, at least I was very lucky to get some really good ones. They're really, really meaty. And for someone who wasn't known, I wasn't, you know, really like a, I wasn't a star or anything, certainly, but you know, I was a working actor. But I mean, nowadays, I would never get that part, you know, at that age. That, you know, the guest stars just go to big names now because everyone wants to do TV. But in those days, that wasn't really the case. So I had a lot of opportunities to do some really nice guest star parts that I don't think necessarily that young actors today, you know, have that opportunity, which is too bad because it's a great way to get recognized and really start your career.
One of your other roles that stands out to me is your role in the X-Files episode Chimera, I want to pronounce it.
Yes, that's right. Uh-huh. Yep.
You were pretty scary in that one.
Yeah, that was a scary one. There's one story I can tell about the X-Files episode is I had just had twin boys prior to shooting that. They were about 6 months old. And so I had taken the kind of a maternity leave, you know, from acting, obviously, when I was pregnant. And that was the first thing that I got after giving birth. And I didn't audition for it. They knew me and they just called and offered me the role. And I said, great, I'd love to. And the wardrobe person called me to get my sizes and they just kind of talk over what they want to put you in and get my feedback and stuff. That's generally how it happens. And I said, well, you know, I haven't even read the script. What kind of role is it? And she said, well, you're playing a mom and you have a baby, but they're still looking for they're still looking for twins to play the part. And I said, I have some. She said, you have twins? And I said, yeah. I said, how old? I said, 6 months. How are they supposed to be? She said, 6 months. I said, oh my God, I've got to call the director right now. So she called the director and said, you know, the actress you cast in this part has her own twins. And so he said, fantastic. So my boys, my twin boys, play my baby in that show, even though the part is a girl. So they put my twin boys in little dresses and put bows around their head. And it was just funny because now when you look at the pictures from that show or you look at the episode, they look just like little girls dressed up. And of course, they never let me live it down.
Mom, you dressed us as girls.
I know, on national TV.
But they're TV stars, so there you go.
Exactly.
But that must have made filming easier because you don't have the normal like separation anxiety from the mother.
Yeah, exactly. No, they really were happy. They were really happy. That I find that anytime my kids have, they've worked with me on a couple of things, although I haven't, you know, I haven't put them into the business, as it were. But a couple of times, they, one or the other, both have played my kid in something. And yeah, the producers and the director always prefer it because, A, you have, you know, some sort of physical resemblance to them, probably. And secondly, you, like you said, there's, you know, you just have a camaraderie and with your child that you don't have with a stranger that you meet that day on the set, you know?
Did they already know you from Millennium?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep.
How was the feeling on X-Files? Was that a nice place to work?
Yes, it was. And David Duchovny at the time had also just had a baby who was almost exactly the same age. And so that gave us a lot to talk about because his baby was on the set. My babies are on the set and stuff. Yeah, he couldn't have been nicer. And yeah, the set was a lot of fun. I had to be careful with my kids because they were so young around the monster because the monster was super scary. But the one day that the monster was working and my kids were there, I kind of brought them over to see the monster and the monster was like, hi, it was making like baby noises and stuff. And they were just laughing at, they were just laughing. They weren't scared at all. So I guess they didn't know any better, you know, because they were so little.
When you read that script, did you know you were the bad guy going into it?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. That was a big reveal at the end.
Yeah, you don't really see that coming.
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, when I start the transformation, I'm in the bathtub and I'm wearing these black contact lenses, which cover your whole eyeball, so your eyes are just black.
I heard they hurt.
They're not comfortable. I will say that. I think that they've probably gotten better. You know, that was quite a while ago. So I'm sure the technology has gotten better because, you know, there's so many shows now that are either werewolves or zombies or, you know, that all these special effects shows that I can't imagine that the eye contact, you know, whatever they're doing to change the color of your eye or whatever they're doing hasn't improved since then, you know?
Yeah, I think maybe they do it CG now.
Yeah, probably. That's probably true. But they tried to get them in and shoot fairly fast and get them out back in those days.
Your career, I mean, you've been working for a long time, even though you took some time off, I guess, to raise your children?
Yes, I did. And I started when I had the kids, I was also a writer, not professional, but I had written a script for myself to act in right before I had the kids. And as a result of trying to get that movie set up, I got a literary agent and wrote about in the time the time that I took off from acting, I was a working writer, and I did that for about 10 years.
Wow.
Although, unfortunately, none of the movies got made, which is not an unusual story in Hollywood, but still kind of a little bit disappointing when you put so much into each one. But, you know, I made a good living, and it was a great job to have while I was raising my kids. And a few years ago, actually when they went to middle school, I decided to go back to acting because it was a little discouraging that none of the movies were getting made. And I really missed acting. And frankly, it was really the only other thing I knew how to make a living at, because it's really the only job I have ever had. I've been acting since I was a teenager. So yeah, so I've just in the last couple of years gone back to trying to, trying to get acting work. And I wouldn't say it's been a meteoric return, but I've gotten a few things, and it's been a lot of fun to be doing it again.
Were you always a creative person? Did you come from like an artistic family?
Not necessarily. Nobody was in the business, although it's not like they were without any artistic. And like my father was a musician, played the piano, and my grandparents did as well. They were musicians, not professional, but so it wasn't, like I said, an unartistic environment, but I wouldn't say it was a specifically artistic one either. I started when I was a teenager. I was very interested in fashion and modeling, and I went to New York. I was going to go to drama school, but I got an opportunity to be a model in New York. I got signed by an agency there, and so I decided to put college on hold, and I went to New York to be a model, and I did that for a few years, and then studied acting there. And rather than going to drama school, I just studied at different places, with different teachers in New York City. And then my first job, I did commercials, but my first real acting job was on a soap opera called Search for Tomorrow, and which was at that time the longest running TV show in history. It started out as a radio show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I was on that for about a year. And that was very good training, just in terms of, learning lines every day, because, you're shooting every single day. It's not like shooting a movie where you have the luxury of doing 20 takes, or if it's really, you have to be very workmanlike, and you have to hit your mark and know your lines and find your light. And all that stuff was terrific training, at that age. I was, probably 20 or 21 when I did that show. So yeah, so it was great training to learn all that stuff. And from there, I went on to, at that point, I was in New York, and then I moved to Los Angeles and just did, throughout my 20s, like I said, I did a lot of pilots, and I always had a little bit of bad luck with pilots. I would test for pilots every season, which are, the prototypes for TV shows.
Right.
And, but you had to decide before you went into test which one, if you had the luxury of getting different offers, which one was in first position, which one was in second position, you would literally negotiate like a 7-year contract. I think, they still do it this way, as far as I know. So I'd have to, I would test for two, and I would have to choose the one that was in first position. And I would always choose the one that I thought would be fun to play for 7 years, because when you're looking at 7 years, like, oh, could I really live with playing this sort of role and this sort of show? You had to think very carefully about it. So I always chose the one, unfortunately, that didn't get picked up, and the one I didn't choose would end up being, like Friends or something. and that happened to me quite a few times. I'm like, well, I guess I chose the wrong one there. But
what are some that got away from you?
Gosh, let me think. I tested for a lot of pilots. Some of them went on to be, big shows, and some of them didn't. But and also with movies, I screen tested for a ton of movies. I screen tested for, my first ever screen test was for Flashdance. And gosh, I must have read for that like 7-8 times. And obviously, I'm quite different from Jennifer Beals. But but it's, there's a lot of times you just don't know what something's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like such a ludicrous idea to have this steel worker become a flash dancer. And
yeah.
It was like nobody really thought it was, it was going to be anything more than a B movie. But you just never know.
Speaking of big movies, a lot of people remember you, I'm sure, from Cliffhanger.
Yes, that's true. In fact, someone just recognized, it amazes me that now, I don't know, gosh, it's probably 20 years later, someone just on the street, I was in a restaurant or something the other day, and said, "Are you in Cliffhanger?" It always amazes me that people, but I think that that role had such a visceral effect on so many people who saw it. They just kind of never forgot it because it was so scary and relatable. And, you know,
I'm terrified of heights, so that literally traumatized me.
Yeah. So I think that more than any other role, probably people remember that role just because it just left an impression, you know.
Was that a lot of green screen?
There was a lot of green screen, but I was actually on the wire too, you know, hanging out there 2,000 feet off the ground.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I wasn't supposed to be, the only thing that when I got the role, the only real stipulation that Renny Harlin, who directed it, said, the only thing I would really, really like you to do, and I would like you to agree to do it before I say you have the part, is I want the opening shot where we find you on the top of the mountain over the credit sequence to be one continuous shot. So you have to actually be up there, and that's going to require you being lowered out of a helicopter onto that point. And I was like, yikes, okay. and I talked to the stunt coordinator on the show, and I asked around a little bit about him, and everyone gave the stunt coordinator, you know, a thumbs up, and that he was the best, one of the best in the business, and I'd be in good hands. So I said, okay, I'll do that. And so that was really all I was supposed to do, and everything else was supposed to be done either on a green screen or, you know, a stunt double or one of those two. And it turns out that I was on location. I was supposed to be there for, it was shot in Italy, which is beautiful place to shoot, and I was supposed to be there for 2 weeks, and I ended up being there for 3 months because they had a lot of weather issues, and I had to keep leaving the mountain because of weather systems coming in, and so I ended up hanging out with the climbers on the movie, who were, you know, the best climbers in the world, and I had so many days off that they, because of, you know, just production issues, that I'd go climbing with them, and we ended up going out on the wire that the scene takes place on, just in a cage, to watch other things being filmed. So I got very, very acclimated to being up there and being on the mountain and being on the wire, so that by the time we actually shot that sequence, I did it myself. The stunt woman didn't do it. But I had to then go back to kind of acting afraid, because at that point I really wasn't afraid anymore. You know? So it was just interesting how the first couple of times I went out there, I was absolutely, you know, just terrified. But of course the cameras weren't rolling. So by the time the cameras were rolling, I had to try to remember, you know, to be, you know, just to recreate the feeling of just being terrified, which by the way, was not hard to do.
Yeah, if you just think about it for a minute, right? You
can get
terrified.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, that scene definitely worked because it was terrifying for just us watching it.
Yeah, it was. I was working up on the mountain with, you know, Sylvester Stallone is terrified of heights, ironically. And so he was never on the mountain at all. I did everything on the mountain with his stunt double. And then I did anything you see him and me talking together was on the stage, on the sound stage, and anything you see me kind of looking up at the back of his head was on the actual mountain. So yeah, so it was very, very, it was a really, really fun shoot and a very challenging one, you know, just physically.
Yeah, I don't think I could have done it.
Yeah, you know, I didn't, I would have said that I didn't think I could have done it either. It wasn't even my intention to, but it's just funny how you just get, I guess you can just get used to anything, you know, and we were up there so long at such heights that after a while you just get used to it. It's like another day at the office, you know.
Living the dream.
Yeah, exactly. Although I have to say, when I saw the movie and I saw how easily they were able to make it look like he was up there too, I realized, you know, maybe I didn't really have to risk my life after all.
You're like, hey, wait a minute.
But I don't regret it. It was a once in a lifetime experience, and you know, I don't know that I would do it again, but I'm not sorry I did it.
I know it's made some top 10 lists on best movie deaths of all time.
Yeah, I think it has. Yeah, certainly a memorable one.
Could you tell me a little bit about your part on Bones?
Yes. So that Bones, I was playing like a sister wife, a Mormon, in a polygamous marriage, and it was that. Now that was funny because that was one of my first things coming back from my hiatus when I was a writer and raising my kids. I think it was my first TV thing after coming back after so many years off. And my agent called and said, great news, I got you an audition for Bones. And I said, great, you know, send me over the information. And the breakdown was, you know, the character description. I have to remember, I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like a matronly woman who is married to a polygamous Mormon, kind of a weathered mother of 12. Something like that. And I said, wow. I said, I don't know if they'll really see me as, you know, being able to pull this off. Of course, it was my vanity that was saying that, you know, I didn't think I could be a weathered mother of 12. And then, of course, naturally, I got the part. So I thought, maybe I don't look as good as I thought I did. But no, that show was really fun. I liked everybody involved on that. And Emily Deschanel, she was absolutely lovely. And the lead guy, David, was great, too. Everyone was, I have to say, most of my, I don't think... Really, in all of my TV experiences, I really have never had a bad time. You know what I mean? I've never really had a time that it's always been, some have been more fun, some roles have been better, whatever, but I have to say, I've never really had a bad time.
Well, that's good. Sometimes you hear some horror stories about...
Yeah, exactly. Although, because I've done so much guest star work and a couple of recurring characters, over the years, but I've never had a regular part on a TV show. It's just the cards just never, like I said, the pilots that I did didn't go, or the ones that did I didn't get, or whatever it was. Or if I got a series regular, the show was canceled, or whatever. So I've never had the experience of playing the same part for years and years. It's usually just been a few episodes that I've done a recurring role or whatever will bring me back or something like that. So I think it's a little bit different because it's such a short, each episode is usually a week or 10 days, which is a lot different from doing a series where you're literally on it every week for years and years. I can see that, that could certainly get tiring, but at least you get rich.
Yeah, I guess you get paid for all that life you sell to them, all those hours.
Exactly. But, I really don't regret the time that I took off from acting when I had my kids, because, when you're on, as I'm sure when you're on a TV show, mm-hmm. even the couple of guest star things that I've done since I've been back in the last couple of years, the Ballins, I did Perception and some other things, even just doing that, I was like, oh my gosh, I have been scrambling to get the kids from school and I've got to call somebody to get. No, that's not to say that if I got a regular job on a TV show, I wouldn't get all that stuff lined up and you have mm-hmm. people to help you, and that's what actresses do. They have to. But I really don't have any regrets about not doing that while they were growing up because, I just wouldn't have been there for all of the, stuff that I was there for as a writer and having an office in my house.
And you can never get that time back, so it's good that you
exactly,
got that.
Exactly, exactly. So I don't have any regrets about that. But it's been very interesting coming back after, I was out of the business for at least 10 years, probably 12. And the one thing that I noticed right away that was different was, when I left acting before this break, there were no smartphones. There was no email. There was, nothing was, everything is digital now. Like they send everything by email or digital or headshots and sides and scripts and everything. It used to be everything was delivered to your door by, a messenger, and now everything's on the computer. And the other thing that I noticed that the set is very different because everyone has smartphones, that as soon as they yell cut, everyone goes straight to their phone. And it's really different because when I left the business, they didn't exist. So they said cut, and you'd go, if you were a smoker, you'd go have a smoke with the grip, or you'd go to the craft service table and have a chat with the hair guy, or, whatever. And so there was a feeling of just chatty camaraderie, getting to know people and stuff like that. That really doesn't exist now. I've noticed in the last couple of shows that I've done, it's not that people aren't equally as nice as they ever have been, but they're just preoccupied like they are everywhere with their, with their phone.
I was going to say it's like that everywhere.
It's like that everywhere, but it was just a stark contrast, like the set environment. I probably wouldn't have noticed so much if I stayed in it as they came around because I would have been part of the people that, it slowly takes over, but because I was out of the business when that happened and when I came back, that was one of the one things that I noticed that really changed just kind of the atmosphere of the set. Cell phones really changed the atmosphere of the set and made it a lot less kind of convivial, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the way the world is right now. I'm not a very jealous person, but I'm jealous of my wife's cell phone because I think she spends more time with it than
time with that than with you. Yeah, you're competing for her attention. But yeah, you're right. It's everywhere, but it was just interesting to see like this marked contrast of when I left the last set and went back onto a new set 12 years later. That was probably the biggest change.
I did see you in that Perception. It was a good episode. That's a show I watched from the beginning. What was that experience like for you? Where did they film and how many days did you do on that one?
Perception, I wasn't on it that many days. They shot me out pretty quickly and it shot, where did they shoot that? That was just here. That was local.
Okay.
Perception was, I was joking with my agent that when I when I left the business, I played the victim. And now that I'm back, I play the mother of the victim. and that was one of those parts on Perception that, my daughter mysteriously disappeared and they found her body. And it was a result of, she was mentally ill. And it turns out that the psychiatrist treating the lead character was the murderer and taking out all of these people that were mentally ill. So, it's a very interesting show.
You were kind of a red herring in that show, I think.
Yeah, it's true.
It could have been you, but it wasn't. But I like that show because you never really know if you're seeing what's really going on or what the lead character, Daniel, what's going on in his head. So
right, exactly. Yeah, it's very interesting conceit. And, I think they pull it off well. That was a show that until I got the part, I hadn't seen. Mm. And I usually try to go back and watch at least a few episodes. At least I know what's going on and who's who and that sort of thing. And coming in, not from the beginning when I first watched it, I was like, wait a second, what the heck is going on? It takes a while. If you don't start at the beginning, it takes a while to figure it out,
I think that's good playing the mother now, though, because actresses that won't move with their age, they don't end up getting work steady.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, that's
this way you can get work as you go along.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't mind that at all. Because I am a mother, I relate to a lot of those parts. Although, look, there are plenty of actresses that never had kids that play mothers, and they do it well. But I do think it definitely helps if you've had that experience. But, a lot of people play astrophysicists, too, and they've never done they've never been a scientist. So it's all pretend in the end of the day.
Yeah, it's fun, though.
Yeah, it is.
You've been doing some theater lately?
Yes, I actually just did. I did a couple things this year. I did a play called Annapurna, which Megan Mullally originated the role with her husband, Nick Offerman, who are both TV stars here in L.A., and I saw it here. And my husband is a theater director, and we've been looking for something to do. We have a summer place in Western Massachusetts where I grew up. And there's a lot of theaters in the Berkshires and Western Mass. There's a ton of theaters and like summer theaters. And because we're there every summer, we always say, God, we should do something. So we ended up doing that play. And that was my first time on stage and probably, I used to do a lot of theater, but probably 15 years. I had done play readings and little things here and there, but that was the first actual run of a play. So it was a lot of fun. It was very, very challenging because, I'm older now. And of course, everybody my age is always concerned about, am I going to remember my lines? And that never was an issue with me when I was younger with a play. I've always been a very quick study, but yeah, you have to work a little harder at it. And, nowadays. But so that was a lot of fun. And then I just finished a play yesterday, actually, out here that only ran this past weekend. And I thought it was a really good idea. It was a couple of young writers who I found out about it because one of the writers is dating my husband's son. And what they decided to do was they have, like a lot of writers, a lot of things that were unproduced, but they were really sorry that they never kind of saw the light of day. So what they did is one was a TV pilot and one was a feature that they just adapted for the stage and made into two one acts, and I was in one of them, but they were very, very popular, really funny, and I thought it was a great idea because if they continue to do it and it becomes a popular thing in LA that people want to see, it'll give writers who have written stuff that never got produced, like me. I have 12 scripts that I wrote, although most of mine belong to studios that I wrote them for, so I don't own them. But there's a few that I did on spec and stuff that, I think it's actually a really interesting idea to reimagine something from one medium to another. And in fact, when I was a writer, the main thing that I did was adapt novels into screenplays. That was my main thing that I did. So just the idea of taking something from one medium and making it entertaining in another medium has always been very interesting to me. So now that I did this play this weekend, I was doing it as an actor, but I'm thinking, maybe I'll take one of my screenplays and see if I can adapt it into a stage play, because then at least it can have a life,
Do you prefer writing or acting, or do you think they're kind of both the same kind of art, just two different sides of it?
I would say acting is certainly more fun. Writing is very solitary, and writing is hard, but it's also extremely satisfying when you finish something and you print it out and you hold it in your hand. You're like, wow, I made this, I'm very proud of the work that I've done. And that's why it's doubly frustrating when they don't get made, because then no one sees them except a handful of people, whoever hired you to do it and whatever friends you showed it to or whatever. but it doesn't really have a life beyond that if it doesn't get made. So that's frustrating. So the nice thing about acting is pretty much if you're hired to do a role, unless it's some super independent movie that maybe never gets distributed or something, but pretty much if you act in something, you're going to see it's going to have a life. It'll be on TV or it'll be in the movie theaters or whatever. So there's a satisfaction to that too, you know, that you don't necessarily have as a writer. A
couple more questions about Quantum Leap, maybe silly questions. I don't know.
No, that's okay.
While watching the episode, you kind of get the feeling that maybe there's a little bit of chemistry between Scott Bakula's character, Sam Beckett, and your character, Sister Angela, like almost, especially at the end when your character was excited that he won the boxing match, like there looked like there was some chemistry. Did you have a backstory built up in your mind for your character at that point?
I think that he and I just genuinely had chemistry. It wasn't necessarily written into the script. And he was just a super nice guy. But I think that because Sister Angela had a life separate from being a nun, like, I think a lot of nuns just go straight from, you know, parochial school into the convent and into the nunnery or whatever, and they don't really have much of a life outside of that, especially in the old days, like the older nuns that maybe in that show that I would have been surrounded by. But because I had that backstory of being just a regular kid and then being out on the street and bad things happening, I certainly don't think I was innocent. But as the thing I really like rewatching that performance is that there is a real... I just found that it was very touching. I found that character really touching, that she... that, you know, because of her faith in God, and then when she transferred to her faith in this boxer, it was almost like some sort of redemption, you know what I mean? And I thought that was really nice. And maybe in another life, maybe they would have found each other and gone out. But there's such an alternate universe with Quantum Leap because he's not who I think he is.
Right.
You know, he looks completely different. He's a completely different person than the one that he's in the body of. So it's hard to say, did I have the chemistry with, you know, if I had met the boxer, the actual boxer, that without that character in his body, who knows if I would have had any chemistry? Maybe not, because that guy was a cheater and maybe not such a nice guy as the one that Scott Bakula plays, you know. So it's hard to say. That's why, you know, there's a surprising amount of complexity when you think about those roles, because nothing is exactly as it appears.
That episode was at the beginning of the series of Quantum Leap. Were you surprised on how popular that series became?
Yes, I was. I mean, I think that I guess the fish out of water, which is essentially what he is from week to week, he's kind of a fish out of water because he's put into this new situation and new person's body, and he has no idea what's going to happen or what he's doing, or he's all these different things each week, which makes it really fun. But I think it just makes it so that I think the audience, I think it was popular because the audience could only imagine what that must be like, but they could relate to it because they could see it happening to anybody, you know, as opposed to watching, you know, there's a lot of popular shows, but if you watch a procedural or you know, crimes investigation show or something like that, you might think, oh, that might be a cool job to be a detective or a policeman or whatever, doctor, whatever it is, but that's not your life. But Quantum Leap, I think it's exciting and relatable because it's not his life either. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably what made it so popular. Plus, the show had a lot of heart.
Yes.
I think that comes through every episode. And one thing I will say, too, about my episode is because they always start the next episode with, like, the last couple minutes of the previous one, mm-hmm. So you see the shift that he goes through to get to the new body that he's being put in, I always got 2 residual checks.
Oh, awesome.
I would get a residual check for the one that I was the guest star in, and I would get another residual check for the one that I was in, like, the very beginning. And it was just lucky that I happened to be in the last shot of the first one. Mm-hmm. Because of that, I got the double residual. So that was great because, you know, obviously when you're working and doing guest star roles and TV shows and stuff, those residuals, you know, that's what kind of gets you through the day, you know?
And you get to see how often they're playing around the world, too.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'm always amazed. Sometimes I'll still get residuals from the shows from the 80s that I just think, wow, they're still playing somewhere. One show that I did around that same time was a show called Shannon's Deal. It was kind of short-lived. It was John Sayles wrote it, the film, who's a film guy. And Elizabeth Pena was in that, who just died recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was really sad to see that she had passed away because that was a really fun show. It was, I played a singer, and the show had all of these actual I played a country western singer, so most of the people were country western people, but not all of them, did cameos in this episode that I was in. So that was really fun. I mean, it's fun when you work with the real quote unquote people, you know, that are supposed to be depicted in the show. Yeah, so yeah, so I have to say it's been a lot of fun. I've had a lot of good experiences and met a lot of super interesting people and traveled to some fun places and stuff. And now that I'm just kind of getting back into it, I hope I get the opportunity to keep doing that.
Me too.
Thank you.
A couple of my silly questions are the montage sequence in that episode.
Right, with the getting the training, boxing training.
Yeah, was that like storyboarded out or did you guys just say, let's go over here and do some stuff and see what we get?
I think it was pretty much written out in the script. You know, I think that there were some things that happened on the set that they just liked or kept in or would explore a little bit. I don't exactly remember which ones were script, but I mean, you know, when I read the script, the montage sequence said, you know, he can barely pull himself up on the bar and he can barely push it. Then, you know, he gets stronger and now he's pumping iron and he's pulling, you know, so it was pretty well mapped out in the script.
Oh, very good. My other silly question is, you were there for the filming of the boxing scenes, right? In the crowd?
Yes.
The streaker they had, was it a real streaker?
Well, the actress, I just thought she was great. And rewatching it, too, I just look at someone like that. You know, I thought she was really, really good in that episode. And I hope she went on to have a good career because I think she deserves it. But anyway, she had, I don't remember, she had on like a completely nude, flesh-colored unitard, mm-hmm. which covered everything. And so when she dropped the coat, she was wearing that and ran through the crowd. And I remember that the director specifically didn't tell all the extras, because there were hundreds of extras there, you know, that were supposedly patrons watching the boxing match. And he wanted to keep it really hush-hush that she was going to be streaking through the crowd because he wanted to get some real honest reactions from the crowd, you know?
Yeah.
And so they didn't practice that. They didn't rehearse it and all that stuff because he really wanted the extras to be surprised. So when she dropped her robe and ran through the crowd, it really looked like she was, like I said, you couldn't see anything because she was wearing this unitard, but you just do a double take because it really looked like she was naked running through the crowd, this beautiful blonde, you know? So I think that was really fun. That was, we were all really on the QT about what was happening, and we weren't supposed to tell anybody and stuff because he wanted to get those surprise looks, you know, from the people that were in the crowd. So I think that worked well.
I think it worked pretty good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Yeah, it's fun to be part of a show that still has fans that make a show like yours possible, you know, so that's great. And thank you for keeping the love alive.